parodies, and viral videos. That's what's coming up on The Art of Bombing, episode 186.
Hi, I'm Bex, also known as Potato Lady Podcast Reviews. Every weekday, I tweet out reviews of indie podcasts. My goal is to unite listeners with their next favorite show, like the one you're listening to now. I also have a newsletter that provides links to reviews, sneak peeks, ad space, and more. So follow me on Twitter at Bex Goose, that's B-E-X-G-O-O-S, to start getting week daily reviews. Find all the info you need, including the link to sign up for my newsletter, in the thread pinned to my profile. And feel free to get at me if you need a recommendation. And now, back to your show.
My friend Dan, he's got a podcast, cause all comics need a podcast, and nobody had a podcast called The Art of Bombing. So Dan went out and bought a tape deck. Who knows why he bought a tape deck? Podcasts don't get played on tape decks, but Dan is from the 80s. So hey there, all you funny jerks, come talk to Dan about your work. Tell him all about your worst times. It's The Art of Bombing.
Welcome to a brand new episode of The Art of Bombing. Dan Bublitz Jr. here with you on Tuesday, January 19th, 2021. I hope everybody had a fantastic week. We have a fantastic episode for you today. We have a fantastic guest. We're steering a little away from comedy just a little bit this week, and we are talking to singer-songwriter The Marty Ray Project from Nashville, Tennessee. Marty is a very talented musician. He does parodies, he does his own original music, and he does covers, and we had a great conversation. So if you came here for comedy and you're like, oh, a musician, well, stick around and listen, because he had a lot of insight, because Marty Ray Project has a lot of viral videos. So we talked about content creation and the importance of engaging with fans online. So there's some good insight that can be gained from this episode. Now, if you didn't see already, if you're a subscriber, you probably noticed this, but we did a bonus episode over the weekend. I live streamed talking about comedy festivals. The audio version is now released as a bonus. It's the Between Bombs number 7. Should I submit to that festival? Check that out. I shared a lot of insight on determining whether or not you should submit to a comedy festival. And then the last thing I'm going to talk about before we get into this conversation with the Marty Ray Project is that Snow Jam Comedy Festival, the virtual Best of Festival, is this weekend. It runs from Thursday, January 21st to Saturday, January 23rd. There's going to be some stand-up comedy. There's going to be some sketches, some content, comedic content, all kinds of different things. For more information about that festival, go to snowjamcomedyfest.com. All proceeds go to the Special Olympics of South Dakota, so it's a fundraiser, and it goes to a really good cause. So check that out. If you need something to do and you want to stay inside, it's going to be hosted on Zoom, so you can watch from pretty much anywhere. And finally, make sure you leave a five-star rave. Excuse me, a five-star rating and leave a nice review wherever you listen to the podcast. Subscribe, like, and share the content. You know, we've been putting a lot of stuff out on YouTube now, so check that out. There's a lot of little video clips, and we've got the TikTok. Everything on social media is Art of Bombing Pod, and then, of course, the website, artofbombingpod.com. I'm going to get right to this conversation. This is my conversation with the Marty Ray Project. Enjoy.
And now it's time for the stand-up soundbite.
I remember hearing all the noise, all the screams coming from the voice. Alarms went off and we all hit. My heartbeat pounding out of my ribs. I look up to the sky and I pray for grace. God, please protect my family from an early grave. Looking all around at the aftermath, holding on tight to the ones I had. Holding on tight to the ones I had. I could think about it for a long time, ponder everything that could have happened in my mind. But instead I'm looking into my baby's eyes, There's a lot of people that can't say that tonight. Some lost more than just a home, a couple of cars and things. Some nightmare came true the night when we were lost in dreams. Pray for me, cause things are not exactly how they seem. Trying to be strong and be a rock, but in my head I scream. I remember hearing all the noise, all the screams coming from the voices. Alarms went off and we all hear my heartbeat pounding out of my ribs. Look up to the sky and I pray for grace. God, peace protect my family from an early grave. Looking all around at the aftermath, holding on tight to the ones I had. Here we go again with another day. All these people showing love in a million ways, while all around the world they pray for self-gain. I'm on my knees thankful for amazing grace. I just know it could have turned out very differently as I dig through all the rubble, wreckage, and debris. Pray for me, cause things are not exactly how they seem. I'm trying to be strong and be a rock, but in my head I scream. I remember hearing all the noise, all the screams coming from the voices. Alarms went off and we all hear my heartbeat pounding out of my rear. I look up to the sky and I pray for grace. God, please protect my family from an early grave. Looking all around at the aftermath, holding on tight to the ones I had. The storm makes us stronger. Oh, with each other we live longer, longer. We just might have to weather together forever. However, I remember hearing all the noises, all the screams coming from the voices. Alarms went off and we all hit. My heartbeat pounding out of my rib. Look up to the sky and I pray for grace. God, peace protect my family from an early grave. Looking all around at the aftermath, holding on tight to the ones I had. Ones I had. The storm makes us stronger.
I did, yeah. I have been. I'm booked up for several weeks.
Oh, that's good. That's good. I know some of those. It's weird because some of them groups, the people are the admins and stuff are kind of, I don't know, very control freaks. It's like the interactions are very sour.
the one that I think the first one I posted in was the one I think that's the one mm-hmm. that you commented on, and I got kicked out of that group. I was in there for like 3 days. I didn't understand. I was trying to reach the admin to figure out why they disabled the comments on that post, and I still had all those people that I couldn't respond to.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to figure out why did you turn the comments off? And I had no way to get in contact with them, so I just put another post and said, does anyone know why the admins would turn off the comments? Am I breaking a rule of some kind? And then the admin commented on that and said I was spamming for emails. And I was like, what do you mean I'm spamming for emails? I'm literally giving people my email so that we can set up a date in.
Yeah,
I don't know if they thought I was faking or something, like I wasn't actually doing these podcasts or whatever, but I've done every single one of them that has reached out to me, as I said in the post. But as soon as they left their comment, they turned the comments off on that new post. So I couldn't even I couldn't even have a dialogue with them at all. And I was like, this is crazy. So then I said, all right, I'm going to get deleted then. So then I left a long thing and told everybody there. I was like, anybody that commented on one of my posts that wanted to have me on, you can DM me on my page or email me here, because this will probably be me. They'll probably, when the admin sees this, they'll delete it, because they do not want to communicate with people. This is kind of like a Nazi type of page here, but it is their page, so I guess they can do whatever they want. They have the right to do that. It's a little strange, though.
It is. Anyway. It is. Well, it really is. I mean, and I feel like, too, people don't do any due diligence to at least look up at, you know, to see who some of these people are. Like, I get it. These Facebook groups get real, you know, probably do get a lot of spam and things like that. But, you know, like, as soon as I saw the post, and it probably helps that I'm a fan. I've been a fan of your work for, you know, several years now. As soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, I know who that guy is. Why is everybody, you know, making these comments and stuff? Because I seen some other kind of negative comments too on some of them posts, and it's just like, oh man, you guys are so unprofessional.
And some of those people were like really just like trying to get brownie points from the podcast group admin. I was like, man, you're getting your brownie points in, because they're gonna see this. They're reading through this, I guarantee you, because they clearly love drama.
Yeah.
And I'm giving it to them. I'm surprised that they wanted to delete me, because I was the only drama in the whole group for 4 days. So, you know,
that's
funny.
I
was like, wow, I came through starting a mess in here, just really trying to get information about what I did wrong. I'm starting a mess. And I think it was, I was at an advantage, and there was several people in that group that messaged my page, and they said, thank you for speaking out, because I've wanted to say something like that for a long time, but I didn't want to get deleted. And I said, well, man, thank you for messaging me, because I could care less if they delete me. So, you know what I mean? I mean, that's the truth.
Yep.
So I'm at an advantage in that regard, that I don't really need them. I'm just trying to reach everybody that has a podcast. Really, that's the truth. I'm just trying to reach anybody. I don't care if it's a brand new podcast, I don't care if it's from brand new to Joe Rogan. I'll be on there. That's what I'm doing this year.
That's awesome. That's great. No, like I said, when I saw the post, I was like, I would totally love to have him on my podcast. So, yeah. But it is funny, because a lot of those groups, I'm in a lot of comedy groups, you know, doing stand-up comedy. And sometimes, you know, they definitely help make connections in other areas, but they're so full of so much drama. It's like there's drama on a daily basis in those groups.
Crazy, man. Who did your backdrop there? That's pretty cool, man.
A graphic designer here in the city. So I live in St. Paul. Her name's Michelle Mildred. She designed the new logo for me. I actually just had this redone. So this year. So, or not this year, I guess last year. I forget, we're in 2021 now.
Looks really good. Looks very professional.
Yeah.
Like your logo, I like your logo. Everything looks great.
Yeah, she did a very good job on it. I was very pleased with it. Looks good on merchandise now. My other the logo I had prior, I just paid like $5 on Fiverr for, and
right.
It fulfilled the need at the time. And I got what I paid for.
How long you been going on this? How long has this podcast been going on?
We're going on 4 years. So
4 years, like, you've been at it.
Mm-hmm. I think May of 2021 will be 4 years.
Nice.
So, yeah. So we've
congrats.
Been out for a while. Thank you. Yeah. It's one of them things where podcasts definitely come and go.
They say that most podcasts never get past, I think it's 80-90%, never get past the 10th episode.
Yep.
I don't know if that's true or not.
I was just going to say, I would believe that.
Yeah. I always tell people when they ask me, because, you know, I was actually podcasting back in 2007. So before Joe Rogan even had his podcast, me and my buddies were podcasting before anybody knew what they were.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't stay podcasting this entire time, but I had a podcast for about a year back then. And the only reason I didn't stay doing it is because I started getting success in music, because that was before I even was attempting to get at music. But I start even as I started getting success in music, I still would have done that had I had a co-host that would hang out.
Mm-hmm.
The co-host kept changing, the co-hosts kept changing over and over. And they kept leaving.
Yeah.
And I said, well, forget this.
Makes it difficult.
Yeah, it's because I like to have a co-host. I like to be able to banter with – I mean, it's fine to do a one-on-one interview. That's cool. But if, say, like I love it when if I get a guest on my podcast now, the Marty Ray Project Chats, if I get a guest on my podcast now and they aren't very talkative, then I can kind of just banter with my guy about that person.
And yep.
I always tell people, I say, look, I don't mind it. If we get a guest on and they are, I either want them to be completely into this episode or completely not into it, because I'm going to make it fun. Either way, I want to make it fun. I always do. So it, cause I'll sit there and just make fun of them. You know what I mean? I don't care how big a celebrity they are.
Yeah. And it's interesting to me too. Like I've seen that with this podcast, you know, I usually, for the most part, I talk to comedians, and on stage comedians are pretty, you know, charismatic and open and, but sometimes when they're not on stage, they're very shy and introverted. So I've definitely had a few guests on here where I had to really work for it, which having a co-host probably would have helped. Cause then, yeah, I would have been able to banter off them, but
right.
That's
I just had a comedian on mine. I had Bert Kreischer on. You know who that is?
Yep. I know who that is. Oh yeah. Yep.
Yeah. We just had him on and he was wonderful. It was exactly like I hoped he would be.
I bet you he was a good time.
He was. It was a very fun episode.
Yeah, I've seen some of his stuff, some of his recent stuff. His he has that series on Netflix the cabin or something. Yep.
Yeah, it's so
pretty entertaining.
Out there, man, they get wild on that thing.
They do. That is for sure. Now, you're in Nashville, is that correct?
That's right. Nashville, okay. Tennessee.
All right, cool. That's what I thought. I've seen a lot of your videos that you put out are from what I thought were studios and different spaces in Nashville. Did you always grow up in Nashville, or did you move there when you decided to pursue music?
No, I was born in Memphis, Tennessee.
Oh, okay.
Grew up across the bridge in Arkansas. And then moved back to Memphis, Tennessee for years until just a year and a half ago when I moved to Nashville.
Oh, so you're living in Nashville is recent. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's cool. There's a really good comedy scene in Nashville. A lot of...
Is there?
Yeah, there is. A lot of great comedians live right there in Nashville or outside of Nashville, and especially now, like there's some bigger comedians that, and I don't know if they're living there permanently, but like during all the lockdowns and stuff in California, several comedians moved to Nashville because things are still open there, you know. Huh. So,
well, that's a good idea for them to do.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, a lot of comedians. Yeah,
from LA to Nashville, that's a good move.
Yep. Some went to, you know, like, well, Joe Rogan and them, they went to Austin, but yeah, quite a few are in Nashville. So.
Where do you live?
I'm in St. Paul, Minnesota.
So, Minnesota.
Minnesota. Minnesota. Yeah. Up great north.
You don't really have the Minnesota accent.
Yeah, that's because I actually grew up in South Dakota, which is similar but still quite a bit different as far as how we talk. And then I lived in California for quite a while too, so I think if I had any of the accent, it probably went away.
Right on.
Yeah.
Like, I always thought it was cool, the accent. Fargo. Yeah. I call it the Fargo accent.
Yep. Most people do. I've tried to do it like so I can do it on stage, and I just can't quite get the accent down. I don't know. I've tried, but I'm not very good.
You're a comedian.
Yes, I'm a stand up, yep.
Sweet. Right on, man. That's cool.
Yeah. I've been doing it. Oh, about 10 years now, I think. So I've been doing it for a while, working the road mostly. I'm one of the unknown people.
For now. Someday, what is your comedian name? D-Bub?
Well, yeah, online I go by D Bublitz Comedy, but yeah, so my name's Dan Bublitz, And that's,
I know, but is that your stage name too?
Yeah, Dan Bublitz is. No, I just have that. Yeah, I just have that for the social media because it's easier.
I got you.
Branding.
You ever get tired of people when you say you're a comedian? You get tired of people going, "Hey, tell me a joke."
It gets annoying. It really does. that's for sure.
That's what comedians do. They just got jokes in their bags.
Yeah, you know,
it's the same as. It's the same as being a singer that you say, I'm a singer, songwriter. Like, oh, sing me something.
Yeah, like, yeah. It's like, yeah, I'm just going to take my guitar and go.
I'm not really a jukebox, but, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a good response.
If you want to hear something, you can go to Marty Ray Project on any social media, and it'll be there. So that's what I always tell them.
Yeah.
Sometimes I will, though, if it's a sweet person.
Yeah,
and they're not being stupid. I'll sing right there in front of their face, right there. And I mean, right here like this.
Right yeah, there. Right there. You know, I like it.
I get right up in the face hole and sing to them.
Yeah, that's the way to do it. I'm kind of the same. If the person is genuine and they're being polite, I'll just do a quick one liner. But yeah, a lot of times it's some drunk person at a bar that's really annoying, and it's like, if you want to see it, buy a ticket and come see me at a show.
Boom, mic drop.
Yeah, exactly. It's like I'm off duty right now.
I'm off duty. I like that. I'm not in my comedy uniform right at the moment. So
exactly,
you caught me at a bad time.
And I get that too, because it's either when they find out that I'm a comedian, it'll either be one of two things. It'll be the standard, "Well, tell me a joke," or it's, "Well, you don't seem very funny." And it's like, well, that's
because... Oh, now that's a cut down.
Well, I'm like, well, but also, I'm not working right now. It's like, I'm funny on stage. I don't need to be funny all the time.
Golly, so if you've had people come up to you and go, "You don't seem very funny." Like,
people have said
that to you?
Yeah, I've had... Well, not like to be me, but like, I before a show, I'll be sitting at the bar just kind of hanging out or whatever. And then somebody would be sitting at the bar and they'll find out that I'm performing. I'm the comedian. They're like, "Oh, you're the comedian tonight? Well, you just don't seem very funny." And it's like, well, I'm not always on. Just wait till I go up on stage and then you can make that judgment.
Wow, man. But I heard that, like you just said earlier, I heard that a lot of comedians are kind of chill and not real lively. Mm-hmm. outside of the stage.
Yep.
So you know a lot of comedians. Is that typically true for the majority of comedians?
Oh, I think for the majority, yeah, we're pretty mellow and just kind of chill. You know, you definitely get a handful of people that are always on and trying to be, you know, center of attention on everything. But for the most part, majority are pretty chill. We'll just kind of keep to ourselves, you know. But then once you're on stage, it's a whole nother world.
Yeah, right. That's how it is. That's how it's supposed to be, I guess. You should be able to have time off.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you shouldn't feel like your job is to make everybody laugh all the time. Then it becomes a little overwhelming.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Oh.
Well, and with, you know, social media and everything like that, it's already overwhelming when you're not on stage because, you know, trying to put content out. And I know you're familiar with that because, you know, you put a lot of content out music-wise, especially on YouTube. But, yeah, so that gets kind of overwhelming too because there's just so many different platforms.
Oh, man, it is so overwhelming. Making sure you post everywhere consistently, and especially if you're a one-man team like me, post consistently everywhere, answer your people back because they deserve that.
Mm-hmm.
Answer them back in the comments as much as you can, answer them back in the messages as much as you can, emails. Also staggering your posts because you never want to post the same thing across all your platforms the same day. That's never a good thing to do, but staggering it, and then, you know, you end up forgetting to post it on one of them, and you're like, oh, man, I got off schedule.
Yep. So, and then on top of that, trying to have a regular life, you know, family and things like that, too.
Exactly. Yeah, sometimes people don't realize that you actually do have a family, but this is the way I make a living, so I have to do it. So it is. It's understood. It's a blessing and a curse sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But it's mainly a blessing to me.
Yeah.
Everything that I've been given and I've gained that God has given me, it's a blessing. I don't, even though there's work involved. There's nothing wrong with a little work, being overwhelmed every now and then. That's good.
Yeah.
Pressure is what makes diamonds.
Yeah.
D-Bub. Can I call you D-Bub?
You can. That's fine. I'll take it.
Cousin D-Bub. Because that sounds like somebody from Arkansas. You know what I mean? I think I might have had a cousin D-Bub somewhere
that's
along
funny.
The way.
I definitely could be. I come from a very redneckish family. So.
Got on. Welcome to the family, D-Bub.
I like it. I'll take it. Yeah, so with music, you really blew up, you know, with YouTube. And I mean, obviously, that's where I saw you. And I saw you a few years ago when somebody else shared one of your videos, which it was the Vanilla Ice one that you had done. How did you just decide to start doing some covers? Because when you do covers, the covers that you've done, and I know you do a lot of original music too, but like your covers are just something else. They're so amazing. Like, it's a whole different style. Like, the first time I saw you do a cover, I was just like, wow, what is this? This is amazing.
Well, I only do covers hoping that people will listen to the originals. That's the only reason I do covers.
That's
but
fair.
A lot of people do, and a lot of people don't. That's kind of, it's like the middle of the road type thing. I've sold a lot of albums just because of people. I call them true projectors. I call my fans projectors, and myself even. I'm a projector. Anybody actually that does something that is outside the norm that they love, but they want to try to make a living doing it, that's a projector to me. So that's where that name comes from. But anyway, and also the people that support those people. So I started doing covers just simply to try to get people, because that you can't. It's hard to release an original song.
Mm-hmm.
When you have no fans at all, release an original song and expect people to listen, it's even harder to do that now, right? It's hard to get people to listen to original songs now. And it is for anybody that doesn't have a multi-million-dollar corporation behind them pushing their music for them. And even some of those with all that millions of dollars behind them do not catch.
Mm-hmm.
So there's many songs. It's very hard to get people to listen to something they've never heard, and to get them to click. Just to get them to click is tough if they don't know the name. So covers are something. I said whatever covers mean something to me, whatever throughout my life or even now, if whatever songs mean something to me, if it's a song I've heard recently and it moves me, then I'll cover it, and hopefully people will hear that and they'll draw some people in and they'll go check out to see if I have albums. And I do. I have three albums, two full albums and several singles. But the point is, and those are all original besides one song, and that's the Ice Ice Baby. And the only reason that I released that one on my Expression Not Perfection album was because Vanilla Ice and I became friends, and it was easy for me to get the copyright,
mm-hmm.
the rights to release it. And we were also supposed to do that song, do a version together. And so I had already recorded that song, and he got busy, and I just said, hey, I got to get this album out. So I'm going to write a rap for the second half. And then, so that's what's on the album, actually, the Expression Not Perfection album. But nonetheless, that song, Ice Ice Baby, I had already started building a fan base way before that song. Like, it did blow up, and that's not even my biggest song on YouTube, but that one did blow up, and I did perform with Vanilla Ice, became friends with him. And, the biggest song on YouTube is actually, Modest Yahoo One Day mashup with, No Woman, No Cry by Bob Marley.
Yep.
And then actually that the second biggest is Old Town Road. So the goal for me is to have one of my original songs like Haunted or Outlaw or something like that to get way bigger than any cover I've ever done. But I'm not bitter about it. I'm happy and thankful that I have people listening at all.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause
that's a blessing just for people to, but I don't like for people to think that all I do is covers. You know, some people think that. They don't know. And that's not their fault. Well, it kind of is their fault, but they've been kind of trained to only give somebody a shot if the record labels tell them to.
Mm-hmm.
So people see success in music as, are you signed or not? Signed, right?
Yeah.
Because I get those comments all the time. I say, man, why isn't nobody signed you yet? And they don't know. I don't want to be signed. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
They don't understand. That's not what I'm looking for. I have a family, so I'm not trying to be gone for months and months out of the year and not see my family, because before I did that, I'll just go get a different job and do something else. I'm not going to give everything to music. Like some people say in some of these motivational speeches, you got to give everything. You shouldn't give everything to anything other than your family first. So I say God first, family second, and then people after that. Then whatever's left over, you can give that to your goal or your dream. But you can't say I'll do anything for success, because then you probably really will do anything for it.
Mm-hmm.
And that means spending whatever morals you have, whatever things you were standing on or grounds you stood on, you'll give up on all that just for success. And that's not, I don't think that's a good thing for people to be saying. Nonetheless, the very first thing I got that I got some traction with was a song called All About That Beard. It was a parody I wrote.
Yep.
You ever heard that one?
I have. And I was going to get to that too, because that's another interesting thing about you. I mean, you're, like I said, your music is really good. You got a really good voice, and like your originals are really good, but you also do like humorous songs, because that you've did some,
right,
some other parody like songs too. Like that's not your only kind of humorous song.
Well, right? my whole career, I say career, the whole dream kind of began as I wanted to just do comedy songs. That's all I wanted to do. I wanted to make comedy videos, comedy parody music videos. I was a big fan of Cletus T. Judd back in the day. You know who that is?
Mm-hmm.
Cletus, yep. T. Judd, Weird Al, these people. When I was growing up as a boy, I really loved the way that they would take a song and that was popular and rewrite the lyrics and make music videos, and they were funny to me. And I always thought that was so cool, and it takes talent to do that. And so I said, here's a way I can write and still have the algorithm show it, because it's actually a popular song, but it's still me writing it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still writing these lyrics. And if it impresses people, then a lot of times, I'm not bragging, but a lot of times with songs that I've done parody, they say, I like this way better than the original. And that's always fun, because you go, hey, all the labels and all the big wigs got their song, and there's people out there that like mine more. That means the world. So it's like with, especially with All My Friends Are Bearded, that one right there, that's a parody of Heathens from 21 Pilots.
Mm-hmm.
There's tons of those comments on there saying they like, and I like Heathens. I like 21 Pilots. That's where that came from, was I was actually listening to a lot of 21 Pilots at that time. And that was in Suicide Squad. But anyway, yeah, when I did the video for All About That Beard, I had no fans at all at that time. I'd been putting out a few little music videos, covers here and there, but I had no fans really. And I said, I'm going to try to learn how to make videos properly, because I had made some crappy music videos with some crappy camera equipment, just trying it out. And in some of those back in the day, some of them did all right, you know, for not having any fans, no fan base, they did all right. But I said, I don't get serious and try to actually make, and you could tell that when you look at the video progression of my videos, that very first music video was All About That Beard. And I went and rented a camera and a lens, and that was my first attempt at doing something and editing it. And I didn't even know to color it. I didn't even know you had to color the footage. So the footage looks like crap. I mean, it looks horrible. It's not lit right. It's not, but it ended up the very first day we posted that video, it got 2 million views on Facebook.
Wow.
So, yeah, I was like, whoa, this is crazy, man. So then then people started going to my Facebook page that I had created at the time. I don't know if I ever changed it or created a new one, but nonetheless, people started going to the Facebook page and the YouTube. And for a while, I didn't even know they were going to YouTube. That YouTube channel had just been sitting there doing nothing for a long time. And people started going, and I said, well, I'm going to start making more content. And I was just trying to be consistent with posting. And in between there, one night, it was pretty crazy, because one night I realized I had not been consistent. I had not been posting consistently. So, because at the time, I'm running a record service for my dad. My dad has always had a towing company, and I was running his towing company in West Memphis. And so I was doing all this while in the midst of running a tow truck company.
Wow.
And so I remember in the middle of the night, I believe it was like 3 o'clock in the morning, because the original post for that Ice Ice Baby was on my personal profile on Facebook, not my page, because my page at the time, your personal profile got way more attention than your page, unless your page was massive. And I didn't have I had maybe 5,000 people on my page at the time. And so I didn't really even post it. I wasn't posting anything there anyway. So I just posted that song at 3 o'clock in the morning. I ended up posting that. And even in the original description, I put, I haven't posted in a while. I'm trying to be more consistent. I'm sorry. I know it's been a while. Here's a video I've been doing. This is the way I've been doing Ice Ice Baby for a little bit. Hopefully y'all like it. If not, you can wait for the next one. You know, something like that.
Yep.
And so it was like a set it and forget it type thing. You know, like an infomercial, set it and forget it. I just posted it and went about my business and was doing things. The next thing I know, that thing had became this monster of like World Star Hip Hop picked it up and posted it on their page and their website. Bam Margera posted on his website and page, and all these people were sharing it and posting it. And my video got on my personal profile to like 2-3 million. And then I posted it to my page because so many people were going to the Marty Ray Project page, and it was the page was blowing up. So I said, I'm going to at least have it here too. And so then when I posted it on the page, then it got like 5-6 million on the page. And then on Bam Margera's website, page, it got like 10 million. And then that video, accumulatively, there's some on my page now that have 30 million of it. And there's just on Facebook, accumulatively, of the Ice Ice Baby, it probably has about 100 plus million views.
Wow.
In total.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's great. It is crazy, man. It's a blessing, dude. I couldn't believe it. And then all of a sudden, the funny story is, when all that happened, you're like, wow, this is crazy. Like, what? Maybe I'm about to be able to have some record labels start calling or something. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't happen. Nobody called me. And because at that time, I was thinking that I needed a record deal. Like, I was like everybody else. You have to have a record deal to make it in this game. And so I was waiting on their phone call. Never got it at that time. And I remember there was a bunch of people messaging me and saying, hey, Rob, Vanilla Ice is my best friend, you know, one of my best friends or whatever. I'm going to send him this video. Y'all need to do something together. And I was like, all right, okay. Because, you know, you don't really believe these people.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yep.
There were several of those people. And then they kept saying, give me your number and I'll tell him to call you or whatever. And I was like, okay. And so I gave him my number because I had nothing to lose. I didn't have any, you know, that was a work phone anyway. It was Glenn Ray's towing. It was my dad's towing company phone. I said, all right, yeah, because you can look that up anyway.
Yep.
And so I gave it to him, and it was several months later, I gave that to several people. And then several months later, I get a phone call, and I say, Glenn Ray's towing. And he goes, it was actually Rob, and he goes, hey, Marty Ray. And I said, how you doing? Glenn Ray's towing, you know? And he goes, man, I love that Ice Ice Baby, man. It covers nice. And I'm like, appreciate it. How can I help you? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then, And then he was like, hey, it's Rob. It's Rob. And I go, okay. How can I help you, sir? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I was a huge fan of Vanilla Ice back in the day. I listened to that. I could rap every word, and I still love the song the way he did it. And but I did not. I never really knew his name was Rob Van Winkle until that day, because he goes, "This is Rob," and I said, "All right, how can I help you?" And he goes, "He said it's Vanilla Ice." He goes, "It's Vanilla Ice," and I said, "Okay." I was like, who is this? Like, you know what I mean? You, like, anybody would be. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
The common reaction is going to be that. Like, okay. Especially if you have prankster friends like I did. You just really expect that somebody is – they used to have this thing called E-Bombs World. Remember? I don't know if that's still a site or not.
I'm familiar with it.
They had soundboards on there. You've ever been to the soundboards?
I don't know that I have, I know what you're talking about, and I remember them having them.
The soundboards on there from all these different celebrities, they took and had different responses so you could prank call people with their, Black's voice, right? Like, there was a soundboard of Jack Black saying from different movies, and one of his things was, I'll take the six-piece nugget. The chicken McNugget, you know, and then so people were calling McDonald's, prank calling them with that.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. So I was thinking, this was at the height of that. I was like, well, somebody somehow got a hold of either somebody sounds this, because I was thinking, this does sound like it could be him. I've never heard him speak, but it sounds like it could be Vanilla Ice, but I still didn't believe it. And he goes, I want you to come out to Miami and close out a show with me. The first, I think it was the first one. I love the 90s tour. And I was like, okay, well, we'll be there. Just send me an email. You know what I mean? Yeah. Still, you don't know if this is true or not. So you're very skeptical. And I gave you my email, and I got the email, and we went to Miami and performed at Boca, or not Miami. It was actually a little bit north or south of Miami called Boca Raton. So,
oh, that's wonderful.
He's a super cool fellow, man. He's actually been on my podcast as well, and I'm going to try to have him back on again. But
that's excellent.
We stay communicating every now and then. I told him Merry Christmas recently, and he said Merry Christmas to me. So, you know, it's little things like that. I call myself, while I ain't famous, I know a lot of famous people, and I got a lot of great stories. You know, I'm a story collector. I think we're all story collectors if we realize what our lives are about. We collect stories, even especially comedians, they collect stories and turn them into funny moments. Even if they might not be funny, a comedian can take it and say it on stage to where it is funny.
Yep.
So, and I kind of try to be that way as well, but not on stage. I wouldn't dare want to be a stand-up comedian. That's a hard job there, man. I couldn't handle that. That's
it definitely can be.
Yeah, man. Like, you got the perfect show name for comedians, The Art of Bombing, because bombing at a comedic stand-up show has to be the worst, man.
Oh, absolutely.
You have to have immediate gratification every joke. If they don't laugh, and if you tell your first joke and then they don't laugh, and you're kind of, oh, wow, it's a tough room. And then you, it's hard to go on. Is it not? Is it not hard to go on?
Oh, it is. Because
And then I bet your show feels like, I bet you the whole rest of your set just starts to really feel like, ah, man, if that didn't get them, this is, because that's coming out the gate. If that didn't get them, this next one ain't going to get them.
Yep.
Is that how it works?
Oh, absolutely. You go, at least for me, and you know, if a joke doesn't work, or especially like at the beginning, I go immediately in my head and I start thinking about, you know, what I've got coming up, and you know, and especially, and I'm not like a controversial comedian by no means, and you know, so I'm not doing like edgy material, but when I was a newer comedian, you have some of them jokes because you're just not mature. But you know, I've had situations where you'd talk about a certain topic and the audience would get real tight, and it's like, well, if they didn't like that and that was mild, they're definitely not going to like it if I go further that way. So now I'm going to have to not do these jokes because they're definitely not going to like them. But yeah, you immediately get in your head and you're like, oh, well, if that didn't work, you know, where do I go? Can I do something different? And then if you tell your next one and they don't like it, and you just you and then you go further and further in your head.
Yeah.
And then it turns into an eternity.
Yeah, and then your 30-minute set feels like you've been here for years mm-hmm. waiting to say that last bombing joke that you thought was killer.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I've always I don't know how it is with music. I know you can have bad gigs, but there's not really necessarily bombing in the same as, like, with comedy. But, like, when I've always noticed, like, with comedy, if you're bombing, it feels like an eternity. But if you're having a really good set and having a good time, the time just flies. Like, you do a 45-minute hour set, and you're like, wow, it's over already? I thought this felt like 10 minutes. But that bomb, ooh, 3 minutes,
that's
eternity.
That's exactly how it is when I play live, is the show goes on. I'm always over time.
Mm-hmm.
Always. Because if it's a 2-hour show, because I like to talk to my fans as well. I like to interact and make them laugh a little bit or whatever and tell them a little story here and there quickly. And they seem to enjoy that. And I enjoy it because I like to talk, as you can tell. You haven't said much the whole time because of me. So
that's all right with me. That's how I like it. The less of me on this podcast, the better.
Can we just get you out of here? Let me go ahead and start talking.
This is your podcast now.
Yeah. Marty Ray, The Art of Bombing here. No, but you in your email it says try to think of a bombing story. And I was like, huh. The only time that in music that I can think that was a bomb to me, at least, and I'm sure there's many people that get on stage and they in music and they go, they're not like their voice isn't right that day or they're not playing the best or whatever. But I have been blessed in that God has always allowed me to be able to, when it's time for me to perform, I'm ready to go. Even if, cause I always tell people, they say, well, are you nervous when you get on stage? And I'm never nervous on stage. It's the weeks leading up to it, where when I book a show, then it's the show comes up is about 2 weeks out, and I get a scratchy voice, or I get some nasal congestion, or something like that, and I'm like, oh no, is this going to be gone before I do the show? I can't sing with my nose completely stopped up, and so things like that. I had to cancel a show one time, and it was actually a private gig. And this guy was who's a very good friend of mine now, and he flies us to Florida every year. But this was the first time, and he was a big fan, and he said, I want to fly you to Florida. And this was a very well-paying gig. And I want to fly you to my vacation house in Florida, and y'all play for us at this in my backyard. And I said, okay. I said, we're there. We booked everything. He had paid the deposit. And I only have one good ear. I should say that first. This ear here, when I was 5 years old, I had a claustiatoma, and I lost almost all my hearing in this ear.
Oh, wow.
So, like, it ate up the bones, all the bones in there and the eardrum. So, anyway, so I only have one ear that I can hear out of. So, then I got sick about 3 weeks, maybe a month out. I got sick, and I was coughing a lot back then. This was years ago. Not COVID. I was coughing a lot. This was years ago.
I know.
And you got to be careful what you say now.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, he's doing a podcast while he's got COVID. He's not wearing a mask either. No lie. I did this speech one time. I did a speech for this club. I did a speech, and we're on the Zoom. It's an online speech. We're on a Zoom. This is true. It's so hard to believe this is true. We're on a Zoom call. And I'm giving a speech to these people. They like to have people come in and talk to them. And I'm giving the speech. I don't even give speeches, but my buddy said, would you give one? I said, sure. I don't know if it'd be interesting or not, but I'll do it. And so I was doing this, and as I'm doing, you could see all the different TV screens or whatever you call them, the Zoom screens. And this one old man is sitting there with a mask on, and I go, I go, man, Jim ain't catching Corona even through the computer screen. That man's legit. He ain't going to do it. And I was like, man, you're at your house, bro. My breath is not coming through here. It's not going to touch you, my man. Anyway, that's funny.
I've actually seen that on some Zoom stuff that I've done. I've seen some people wearing masks, and I'm just like, same reaction as you. I'm just like, what?
I don't get it. Like, what in the world? It's a computer.
Yeah.
Like, it makes me wonder. It makes me wonder if they're actually doing that when the computer's off, or are they just doing that while it's on? I mean, because this was an older guy.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know if he thought that he better put that mask on. I don't know. But anyway, I was coughing a lot back then. Again, not COVID. Back then, I was coughing a lot. And my only good ear, it ruptured my eardrum.
Oh, no.
I couldn't hear anything at all, period. I was deaf. And I could hear, but it was like,
very that's muffled. What it sounded like. Wow.
It was like this right here. And so I was like, man, I don't know. I hope this goes away. I was praying. I was like, Lord, take this away before the show comes, because I got to get, and then I had to fly. So, you know, flying with your ears is bad. So then you're sitting there thinking about a million things. You think about, well, it's already stopped up. I fly. What is it going to bust my eardrum wide open? And I won't be able to hear it all. So you're just, and eventually I waited till about 2 weeks out, and I told him, I said, man, I can't hear a thing. I can't sing. I can't hear. I said, I hate it. I'm so sorry. But he was very kind. He was very upset, meaning hurt. He was emotionally upset that I wasn't going to get to be there. And he said, don't worry about it. We'll have you out. So then he did have us out. So that worked out good. It actually was for the best in the end, because It made us a little bit closer, you know what I mean? As not just a fan and a singer, we're actually very close friends now. You know, I would say he sends me Christmas cards.
Oh, that's wonderful.
I don't do Christmas cards, but he sends them to me, and they're very nice, very very nice Christmas cards.
Yeah.
One day I want to go down there and take the Christmas card picture with his family.
I love it.
You know what I mean? That'd be so funny. That they were like, "Who is this? Who is this guy?" When he sends out his business partner, well, this big burly bearded man, because they're all clean cut, and it's a very clean cut, wealthy family, and I'm there like with a plaid shirt on, with my arms around him, like, you know,
I love it.
That'd be great. I gotta tell Tony we're gonna do that.
That's funny. That would definitely be good. Yeah, it's amazing, and I can definitely tell just by talking to you that you're making connections with, you know, fans, and like almost like a personal connection is very important to you, and that's something I think is incredibly important as, you know, as creative people, that we do that, because if it isn't for them, we wouldn't be able to do what we do.
That's exactly right. And people don't know that. They don't realize that. No. Unfortunately, even people on the small end, like the small scale, like some of my friends who are trying to make it, quote, make it in music or acting or anything. And they put out these things and they don't even comment back. And they get like maybe 5 comments, and they don't comment back to those people. And I'm like, how dare you, man? You don't deserve success. You don't deserve this kind of success, because the only reason you will ever get it is because of those people that are commenting now.
Mm-hmm.
And then the people that comment later, and then the people that share. And if you don't think that you have the time for those people, then they shouldn't have the time for you. And I wish the world really worked that way. I wish that if an artist or a creator didn't have the time for their fan base, then they just could not be a creator anymore. And then that just would not work. So all the fans would go, you know what? You don't talk to us. You never interact with us. Forget you. We're not going to share your stuff. We're not going to comment on your stuff. Because then they would start to go, oh, crap, I got to change something. And even if they changed it just because for their algorithm, or just because they said, I got to now, maybe, just hopefully, and maybe they would build a relationship with these people and actually care about them. Because too many of these artists and these people don't care about the funny story about Bert Kreischer, right? I'm not friends with Bert Kreischer. I've been a fan of his for a little while. I've been commenting on his. He's an example of somebody that I'm talking about that is actually cares about their fans.
Mm-hmm.
That's huge. Like, he's huge. He's actually famous, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And, So the way I got him on my show was, first of all, I'm verified on Instagram, so that helps in the regard of when I would comment on his videos, and I wasn't commenting, I was just making funny comments, right? Like, if he made a post, I'd make funny comments, and a bunch of people would like them. Then Bert responded to one time with laughy faces. He thought it was funny, so then he followed me, you know. And after he followed me, I was like, wow, that's crazy. He followed me. And so anyway, after that happened, as soon as that was a while ago, when I started this podcast, I don't remember when exactly, but we were in the 31st episode now, but this new podcast. And then from that day forward, I was messaging Bert. And I was like, hey, we'd love to have you on a podcast. And then he said, we'll make it happen. I'll do it. Like, then I was like, okay, cool. That was in January of last year. And so, funny thing, and I told him to read these messages on the podcast episode. It's not out yet, but I told him to read it. It was so funny because seeing the persistence that I have, and then one of the messages, because I just kept sending it, and I said, eventually I go, look, I will, because you said you would do this show, I will message you once a month until you either say yes, no, or you block me. That's happening. I said, you better get ready, buddy. It's going to be a monthly with Marty. And he laughed in the messages. And he laughed. He said, LMAO. And even that, it still took months. And I just kept sending. I said, here we are again. It's the new month with Marty. And I said, no. So after an actual year of messaging him once a month, usually, I didn't get every month because I would forget sometimes. But then if he popped up on my Instagram, I would send that message. And after a year, I finally got him on. So that just shows anybody that's listening, persistence pays off. It pays off.
Oh, absolutely.
And it helps to have a blue check mark, too, because that makes people go, maybe I should at least check this person out.
Yeah.
It does help in that regard, because people look at social media and they go, if you got a blue check mark, you must be somebody. It don't mean that. It does not mean that.
Yeah. Because
some people actually paid for those. They had a buddy, or they paid. If you worked at BuzzFeed back in the day, that was one of the benefits. You would get verified.
Oh, wow. I didn't know
all
that.
All people that worked for BuzzFeed, they just got verified, even if you didn't know those people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot of these people, you don't even know them. They have no followers, but they're verified. So people really shouldn't look at a verified check mark. I'm glad I have it, because there's tons of different pages that pop up that try to act like to me. Just the other day, I get on my Facebook page, and there's this Facebook page that has literally been just set up, and it took my picture, my profile, Marty Ray Project, and they made it, and it looks exactly like my page. They took my cover photo, everything, and it said Marty Ray Project Live Chats.
Oh, wow.
And they started going and commenting on all my, I mean, hundreds of comments to my fans on my own post saying, hey, come over, we want to chat. This is the new Marty Ray. And I'm going,
oh, wow.
So then I blocked them, then I reported them. I think it actually got pulled down at this point. But then when I thought this was so dumb, I said, when I block them, all those comments will delete themselves. Nope. I blocked them. Comments were all still up. So I had to go, and thank God it was only, when I saw it, it had only been an hour, or who knows how many comments there would have been.
Yeah.
But there were hundreds in an hour. And I had to go each individual one and delete each individual one, because I wasn't going to have, here's the thing. Those things, sometimes those people are trying to get women, because they always comment to women.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like, anyway, from what I can see, it seems like they're either, a lot of times they might be trying to do some human trafficking stuff or something. And I'm like, you're not going to do that with my name.
No, absolutely.
And so I immediately, you know, I pray against them. And then I go and delete every comment, deleting it. Because I'm like, it ain't gonna be because of my name you do this. And those things pop up all the time on Instagram too.
Yep.
And I've seen some messages that are just scary with them saying Marty Ray Project, and it'll just change some little letter or something. And some of these women respond and they're engaging in this conversation. I say, please, if you don't see that verified check mark, it ain't me. I promise you. I'm not setting up another account. Anyway, that's a whole other story.
Well, yeah.
I can't stand scam.
And that happens a lot, yeah, especially, like you said, especially on Instagram, a lot of, and I've seen that too. Even, I know another comedian actually lives in Nashville. Dusty Slay, was talking about, he had a situation where his Facebook account got hacked and they went live and they were like trying to sell like purses or something. And then he tried to report it or whatever. And then he got kicked out as an admin of his own page. And, like, he had to go to Facebook support. And it was, like, a whole big thing till he finally got his page back.
Yeah, I did the same. That was the same thing. Back when I was trying to get verified years ago, I submitted for verification on Facebook. Back years ago, you could submit for verification. And I did that. This was a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And then I get an email. I get an email, random email that said, log in here. It looked like it was from Facebook. It said, log in here to get your verification. And so I did it. I logged in, and they took everything. I had no personal. I had no page, nothing. And it was, you're talking about frantic. At that time, I had 250,000 likes, followers on my page. And I was like, oh, and they were posting porn stuff. Nonstop. Yeah, just porn link, boom, 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 boom. And all these people, some of these people were like, man, Marty, like I was going and reading the comments, and some of these people actually thought that was me. And they were going, man, Marty, I never thought you would have posted something like this. And then some people were like, clearly this is hacked.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly he's been hacked. And then, but some people really thought, I'm like, who knows how many people from that time unfollowed me and they've said, I would never. And then they go like, yeah, he sounds all right singing, but that dude is, he's disgusting. He's
into some bad stuff.
You know what I mean? Like ever say like animals and whatnot on this is weird, man.
Yeah.
And so it's like, it took forever. Facebook is the worst.
Yeah.
It's the worst. I had to go to a forum. I had to go to a forum on Google and try to figure out how to reach these people. You should have a way to contact these people, because at the time my page was verified too. Mm-hmm. So you would think if it's verified, you would surely have some kind of direct email.
Yeah, that's what you would think.
They're a multi-billion-dollar company. They can't afford to have somebody answer emails. Mm-hmm. Get out of here.
Yeah, no doubt.
So stupid.
Especially for big accounts like that, too. Like, I get, you know, people just having personal pages and, you know, smaller Facebook pages. But when you have a Facebook page that has, you know, 200, 300,000 followers, like, you're bringing them engagement. So they should definitely have a way for people like that to contact for, you know, to solve problems. Because
I sure thought so. I have a contact at YouTube. You know,
mm-hmm.
I have a contact at YouTube that I can email at any point, and a couple actually. So Facebook doesn't. It's just Facebook is dirt, man. I love Facebook for the fact of my fans that are there, and they are. Facebook is the reason that I'm able to do what I'm doing now. Like if it wasn't for Facebook, I never would have had a viral video.
Mm-hmm.
Never would have had. Probably there was a time in Facebook where. And this is no lie. There was a moment in Facebook, I call it the golden age, the beautiful times, the paradise, the promised land. And it was back then I could post any music video that I put out without organically it would get a million views. No problem. No, I didn't have to advertise or nothing.
Yep.
Now, throughout the years, I watched as the organic reach just they took more and more of it away so that they could make more money with ads.
Yep.
And now it's to the point where you got to have everything perfect. Your description has to be perfect. Your hashtags, the time you post it. If everything's not perfect, you might get even a page as big as mine or bigger, not, you know, 500 that plus thousand and even bigger, you could very easily find yourself getting 10, 12 likes.
Yep.
On a post. It's a shame.
It really is. Yeah. I actually just got my associate's degree in marketing because that's something that I've been interested in and something that I can apply with entertainment. So I've been watching that kind of stuff. And yeah, like that's the biggest thing with Facebook is that now it's all about money. Like they're, you know, you could, like you said, you could post a video or any kind of post on a Facebook page. And even if you only had like 500 followers, you could get, you know, 20, 30 likes out of that. But like how it is now, yeah, there's hardly any engagement unless you pay for it. And even then, if you're not paying hundreds of dollars a month, you're still not getting very good engagement. Like I've been experimenting and doing small ads here and there for various things just to kind of experiment with it, and the return on investment that I've been getting on that stuff isn't very good. But I imagine if I spent, you know, $1,000 a month in Facebook advertising, my engagement would be quite the opposite.
Well, even if you, here's the thing about Facebook advertising, I will say this. I'll give them this. It's the best bang for your buck in advertising. But if you don't mark, if you don't tag it right, if you don't have all of the demographics right, then you're wasting your money.
Mm-hmm.
You're just giving money. And if you do, like if you do boost post, that's the worst thing you can do. You should never hit boost post. You should always just run an ad. It's better just to run an ad. But When boost post first came out, that was pretty, that worked very well for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
If you like when it first came out, I would when my video seemed like it stalled, so I would post a video, and even if it did get to a million, it would get to a million, and it would just kind of stall out and be trickling. And I'd say, you know what, I'm going to boost it, and I would boost it with some money, and it didn't have to be a lot of money. It could be like, you know, $10 a day. You know, mm-hmm. I would boost it, and it would start getting traction again, and not just from the ad, from the boosted ad, but it would start getting traction on other people's pages because those people that saw it on that ad were sharing it. Then those people saw it. Then they were, because back when share, because you know, Facebook has figured out how to narrow it down to where you're only going to get seen for what you pay for. Mm-hmm. So because back then you could pay for it and people would share it. And Facebook still allowed shares to be seen. You know, that was back when you could share something and your people that you shared it with actually saw it. So that those people would see it, then it would start sharing again, and it started to trickle effect. So at any point that you wanted to boost the video, it was actually a good word, you could boost the video and get other people outside of who you advertise it to see it. But nowadays, even shares are so trash that Facebook has just become really this place. It's actually very despicable if you want to know the truth about it.
Mm-hmm.
The way that they used people to build them their multi-billion-dollar platform, they steal our data and then sell it, and we agree to it because we want to be able to communicate. We want to be able to do business. We agreed, okay, you can do that, but just please. Let people see what I have. You're already selling my data. Why are you making me pay you for every single? If I have 500,000 people that said they want to see, even people have clicked see all on notifications on the little, they still don't see it. I still get messages where people go, man, I even have my notifications turned on for your page.
Oh, wow.
I didn't even know this. When I released the last single, The Storm, they said, how did I not see this? This was like weeks and weeks later, and then months later, sometimes they go, I have my notifications turned to see all. I have, when Facebook Live first came out, it was called it was only available to verified pages. So back then, it was when I would go live, back then, I would get 2,000-3,000 people watching at a time.
Wow.
Yeah. And they would just stay there because that many people were being notified.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't notify 500,000 people, but they notified quite a bit. Now, if I go live, it'll peak at about 800, sometimes very rarely 1,000, but then it'll kind of hover around 3 to 500 people that it will be on at all times. Because it's a real shame thinking of somebody that has half a million people that said they want to see your content, and then Facebook won't show it to them. It's a battle of the it's the independent music, it's the independent creator music, whatever you're in, independent entertainers battle is mainly with corporate algorithms.
Yep. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I've been experimenting with, like with TikTok, and now YouTube has been doing where you can do shorts. Somebody just put me onto that. So I've been kind of playing around with that because I already have a lot of these videos that I put on TikTok or whatever. And of all these different channels, you know, between Reels and TikTok and the YouTube, I'm finding that I've been having more success with the YouTube. It takes a couple days for the videos to take off, but then when they do pretty good. You know, like, I mean, I'm not putting up big numbers, but I put up a short on YouTube and it got 12,000 views in a day or two. But then I also went from like 135 to 150 subs, you know, so.
Yeah.
Which on all the other social media platforms, you know, like, for example, TikTok, I have a video that got 80,000 views, but I didn't get a lot of follows out of it. You know, I barely have 1,000 followers on TikTok, you know. So, right. So to me, it seems like YouTube is really – that way has really been the better payoff as far as doing those short videos.
I think so now. I think for right now, YouTube with the shorts – especially for small channels, I've not had very much luck with the shorts.
Mm-hmm.
I've been experimenting with them here lately, but I've not had much luck with them because ultimately the goal is to get them is to get YouTube. If I had the some people have the short. When you go to upload, it'll say short.
Mm-hmm. See, I don't have that yet.
I don't have that either. So I kind of wonder sometimes. Do they even know this is what I'm doing? Like, you know, because if it gets put in that shorts deck, which is what you see when you're scrolling through and you got this shorts deck, if it gets put in there, then you're probably going to, you know, blow up pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. It's put in that deck, but you have to get put in that deck. There's always with YouTube, there's always a gatekeeper. Mm-hmm. With all social medias, but with YouTube especially, it's always a gatekeeper. And, whether it's a digital gatekeeper or a live gatekeeper with their trending page, it's literally humans that are gatekeeping that trending page. They'll put whatever they want to put on that page. They put it there and call it trending.
Oh, wow.
And they're essentially saying, this is what's trending because we said it's trending, mm-hmm. even if it's not trending, you know, and they push their own agendas and things like that. Of course, like everybody else, that's expected. It's a private place. They own it. They have the right to do that. People get mad about that. And I think it sucks, but you know, they never said that they never said, hey, this is a free for all. And it, you know, we're this or we're that. And you know, they never said that. We always knew what they were when Google bought it. Cause I don't know if you remember, but when YouTube first started, it was actually a very beautiful place. It was, and it still is. I still love YouTube because, like I said, without social medias, I have no way to do music. So I'm thankful for it. They're all a blessing to me. But I do have, some qualms about the way they do business. But nonetheless, when YouTube first started, it was just called YouTube Broadcast Yourself. And people were... This was the first time that normal everyday people could make a video, upload it, and the whole world had a possibility of seeing it.
Yep.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Remember those days?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. It was pretty crazy back then.
Yeah. And that was, for me, unfortunately, it was before I was trying to be a content creator. Oh, and I wouldn't even call myself a content creator. I do content, but that's because I do comedy. But it was before I was doing comedy too, so like I was way behind on everything.
Well, I mean, whatever content you're doing is creating content.
Yeah.
It don't really matter what it is. People that were shaving counters on TikTok. They literally just put shaving cream on a kitchen counter and shaved it, and the video got like 10, 13 million views or whatever, maybe more than that. They were still a content creator.
Yeah,
people were watching it for some reason.
Yeah, that's true. I guess it's I feel weird saying it just because there are people who, you know, like that's all they're doing is making videos for content, you know? And I guess I consider myself more, I'm a stand-up comedian versus a content creator. But really, is it any different? Because you're right. You're absolutely right. You're creating content.
Yeah, nowadays it's not different. Nowadays, if you could be a comedian, and if you're a comedian or a singer, if you're a singer and you say, I don't want to be on social media, you ain't going to get very far. You better hope that you figure out how to grassroots a local fan base that will support you there. And if that happens, that's great, because mm-hmm. then you never have to leave. Like I always said, I said this in another podcast. I said my goal has always been to build a massive following of my fan base in where I'm at, in the city that I'm in. So that whenever I, like, if I had half a million, actually a million, actually 1.2 million, if you had all my social medias together, 1.2 million fans. If I had 1.2 million fans in Nashville area, I could do a show anywhere and it'd be sold out.
Yeah.
And I could continue to do shows and new people keep coming to new shows for years to come until I have to then go and say, okay, I'll start doing shows again. Then those people that need to be serviced from the beginning, they can come back to another show, you see. And it's like, that's a dream. But unfortunately, my fans are all over the world. Mm-hmm. So they're so spread out that it's hard sometimes to say, hey, I'm doing a show down the road at such and such place, and to pack it out. If I can get the word to them,
yeah,
if I can get the word out, you know, that's the first hurdle. Get through the algorithm to get to your people that are in this location without spending $3,000 to get the word to them.
Yeah.
You know, that's the first hurdle.
Yep, so, absolutely. Do you, you know, with that, do you do email lists then? Is that something
I
that
do.
You?
Yep, yeah, yep. Everybody that's listening, please go to MartyRayProject.com and join the email list. There's actually MartyRayProject.com. There's merchandise there, like this hat. There's the calendars there. And right now, mainly what we do is private shows. So the only thing there is the podcast episodes every Wednesday that show up on the calendar. So it's the Marty Ray Project Chats podcast. And I do that with Chris Wall, and he's a legendary songwriter. So if you like interview style stuff, you'll like that. And then also the mailing list, of course. And then there's music there. So there's just music. You can just go and listen to the mm-hmm. full song. No, it's not just a sample. You can listen to the whole last album is up. You can just listen to it. And what else? You can donate there, you know, if you want to donate to independent artists. Like, we all needed it. Like, you're independent, I'm sure, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. We all need that. Anybody listening, support your independent creators, because we all need it.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, I got a quick question. I know probably got to get wrapped up, but I'm curious, because you said that you really – what kind of got you going into music is you wanted to do more of the parody stuff. And then how did that transpire where you went from wanting to do, you know, parody music to doing just regular music?
Well, it never transitioned. I still love parody music. I have a song actually right now. If you ever heard the song, I'm a little unsteady. Something. I'm a little unsteady.
It's sounds familiar.
Ambassadors.
Mm-hmm. Sounds anyway, familiar.
I took that song. My daughter was while I was singing that song in the living room. My daughter was coming down the stairs, and she goes, "Did you say Little Debbie?" And I said, "No, but I'm about to." And so then I took the song, and I was like, "Oh, I'm hungry, and I need a Little Debbie." And I need a Little Debbie. And I went and wrote the song, that entire song, about Little Debbies. And I do love Little Debbies, as you can tell.
I'm right there with you.
We're going to make a music video. The music video is going to be kind of like a man that was addicted to Little Debbies, right?
I already like it.
Not far from the truth in my life, to be honest with you. Addicted to Little Debbie's, and he went to a sort of AA meeting for getting off of Little Debbie's. And so he's trying to do daily life without Little Debbie's. And throughout the video, he's being introduced to Little Debbie's through just seeing other people buying them or eating them or holding them. And then at the end, like throughout the whole thing, it starts with where he's at now. Like, I'm laying on the ground with Little Debbie boxes, empty boxes all around me, Little Debbie wrappers all around me, crumbs in my beard, and I'm singing the song and I'm reaching out, you know, and it's a dark room. I've gone down a dark road at this point. But then it starts cutting. The video will start cutting and showing what happened. How did he get back to this place? And at the very end, I'm reaching out and you don't know what I'm reaching for, but then the camera shows there's this light coming and there's a silhouette walking towards me. It's so stupid. There's a silhouette coming towards me and I'm reaching out and there's this hand that reaches out. And then before it gets to me, I pass out, you know, I just can't, I didn't get a Little Debbie in time. And so then you see, it's actually Little Debbie. That's coming out of that light. Yeah. Cause you see the hat in the silhouette, you know, and it's Little Debbie coming towards me. And she, even at the end of the song that we recorded, I actually recorded me opening a Nutty Buddy in the mic. So, like, at the end of the song, she opens the Nutty Buddy, and she puts it by my nose like smelling sauce.
Yep.
And then it wakes me up, you know what I mean? And it brings me back to life.
Oh, that sounds great.
Anyway, parody music has never left me. I love parody music and make it – as long as I can make the video.
Mm-hmm.
If I can't make the video, if I don't think I can achieve the video, I won't write the song. Because without the video of parody music, I don't see the fun in it for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I did listen to those other parody artists like Weird Al and Cletus without their videos. But I did see their videos too. But back then, you didn't have iPhones and stuff, mm-hmm. So you were riding down the road in your truck. Me and my dad would go on long hauls or whatever, and we would just be playing those CDs back to back, you know. So
yep.
Anyway, parody's never left me. That's always been my dream to be able to do that. If I was rich and I had a crew, we'd be pumping out parody videos nonstop, that's for sure. But parody music's not all I wanted to do. I've always wanted to write my own, get my own songs that I've written. I had songs that I've been writing songs since I was 12 years old. So I've always wanted to get those out and let people hear them and see their feedback and hopefully, you know, move some people with them. And that's happened. So it's always been a both, because parody music, while yes, you're writing to someone else's melody and someone else's music, but you're still writing the lyrics.
Yeah.
And if they're good, they translate.
Mm-hmm.
So
absolutely. Absolutely. Well, and I think it's good too. Like I can appreciate when any kind of an artist steps out of, you know, their own skill set, or not skill set, but like their boundaries, you know, where, cause especially it seems like with musicians, a lot of musicians will, this is the kind of music I do. This is all I'm going to do. This is all I'm expected to do. Or because I'm expected to do this, I'm not going to try to step out and do something else.
Right. You think you would ever see somebody like Bruno Mars do a parody?
Well, depends. I mean, probably not, but he probably would. I mean, it really depends on the personality, but I don't think so. But I mean,
I don't think it's that. I think that they're not allowed to. I think the label keeps you from doing certain things. Like Bruno Mars. Well, at Bruno Mars level, he could probably do whatever he wants at this point. But until you get to that level, like all these massive people, sure, they can probably do it. But the label is going to advise against it,
mm-hmm.
very heavily.
Yeah.
They're going to advise against it. Like when Darius Rucker, when he wanted to leave Hootie and the Blowfish to be a country music singer, he was heavily advised against it.
Yeah.
So was Ray Charles. They tried everything to make them not do that. And these people, because they were already huge, they said, we're going to do it anyway. But think about somebody that's on the lower end. They just tell them, no, you can't do that. If you're pop, you don't want to be country. If you're pop, you don't want to be rock. If you're rock, you don't want to be blues. You know what I'm saying? And they say, yep, this is your lane. Stay in your lane. Stay in your lane.
Yep.
So, and I think that's stupid. That's why I really hate labels, man. I hate record labels. I do. I wish they would all die. All record labels die.
Yeah.
I'm gonna get a t-shirt that says that. All record labels die.
I like it. And then on the back, it can say Marty Ray Project.
Yeah, Marty Ray Project Tour coming soon. Completely independent. True sense of the word. I'm going to keep putting things in there. Like the Dunder Mifflin, like the back of the Dunder Mifflin shirt. It's going to be the whole thing that people have to read
just to know that
Marty Ray Project.
That's so great. Well, I'm going to do a couple things real quick while we finish up. I like to do some fun stuff. For comedians, I always ask this, and I'd be interested because you're a musician, but do you have a song that really gets you pumped and ready to go?
Ready to go with a song? I have a problem with listening to other people's songs before a show because I don't want to sound like I'm trying to mimic that person.
Yep. No, absolutely. You know what I mean? No, absolutely so, makes sense. It'd be like
usually before a show, I'm listening to the set list over and over so I can try to remember the lyrics. Mm-hmm. But as far as music, no. But I'll tell you what does pump me up, Taco Bell. So there's that. You know what I
mean? Are you sure you're not a comedian? No.
I just tell the truth, man. It's just funny the way I live my life. That's all it is.
We've got the same diets going on here. Little Debbie's and Taco Bell.
Oh, is that the comedian diet, Taco Bell and Little Debbie's?
Taco Bell especially, I feel like.
Nice. Maybe I am a comedian.
Because it's, you know, always open late. A lot of times I feel like a comedian's diet is whatever's open after a show, which is usually just Taco Bell.
You know what? I hate all the items that they've removed have really hurt me deeply.
Yeah.
I'm deeply hurt by many of the items. They've removed every item that I would consistently get. Did you know that?
I know they removed. So I'm going to be honest and probably going to get some shade for this, but I personally am not a big Taco Bell guy.
You're not a comedian.
In where I live, we also have a regional, and I don't know if you guys if you've heard of this, but we have Taco John's, which is equivalent to Taco Bell. It's fast food restaurant, but it's more regional to my area, and I prefer Taco John's over Taco Bell. So,
well, ain't nothing wrong with that. I mean, you're wrong, but ain't nothing wrong with it. You know what I mean?
And that's fine. I will be wrong.
You're fine. It's completely okay for you to have your wrong opinion. You know,
and I'm in a free country. That's right. And I'm pleased to have my wrong opinion.
Yeah, no, Taco John's is probably great. I can't wait to come up there and try it. I'll tell you a place. I don't know if you ever heard of Taco Bueno. You ever heard of Taco Bueno?
I don't think I have. No.
Taco Bueno is really good too. Taco Bell has a. You know, it was the first job I ever had was Taco Bell, 16 years old.
Oh, wow.
I worked at Taco Bell. I was the first person ever. This is the truth. I don't know if I was the first person in the world, but when they rolled out, before they started selling chalupas to the world, I was one of the first people to start making them. They came and trained me on how to make the chalupa.
Oh, wow.
And as a 16-year-old boy, I'm like, hey, I made it. I made it.
That's awesome.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, that's funny. I guess it wasn't my first job, but one of my first primary jobs that I had was working in fast food too, but it was Hardee's. I worked at Hardee's.
I like Hardee's. Boy, that big hot ham.
Oh, yep. Oh, I love their breakfast.
Cheese, man.
Yeah, so good. So good. Do you have
talk about food.
What's that?
Don't move on. Let's keep talking about food, please.
Right. I could definitely talk about food for a while. That's for sure. I like my food. That's for sure.
I love it a little too much.
Yeah.
But I won't make you keep talking about food.
No, that's okay. I'm just trying to. I don't know how much time you have, but we've been at it for almost an hour and a half. So.
I don't give a daggum. I don't have anything else to do today.
Well, then that sounds like you have a good day if you don't have anything else to do today. Yeah, that's true. So. Very true. What's one of your favorite gigs that you've done? Or I'd be interested to one of your favorite songs that you've written and released.
Well, to ask a person that's connected to each song they've written,
I know
what's
it's
their
a
favorite
tough one.
One. that's not. I don't have a quote unquote favorite, but one of the ones that's most special to me is a song I wrote called Spirit Song, and that one, and then I wrote another song called The Greatest. It's about my daughters. I wrote a song called Miss You Like Crazy. I mean, it's about my fam, missing the life, that missing the people that made your life home is mm-hmm. really what that means. That song means. But anyway, it means everything. So I like my song Haunted, Outlaw. I still have many music videos that I want to make. If I ever get rich, if I ever win the lottery, or I get rich in some capacity, I will go back and I will have a narrative music video for every single song that I've written. That's my goal in life. That's my plan.
Oh, that's so wonderful. That's awesome. Now,
yeah, but my favorite performance place, I would say, was outside of performing for my fans, which I love more than anything, but just for performing, I would say that Vanilla Ice show was pretty unreal. It was surreal, rather. It was pretty surreal being there, literally standing there with Vanilla Ice on stage, and I was on stage and doing a sound check, and I was telling him, I was like, hey, we need more of this, need more of that, and then he said, Mr. Marty Ray Project show, you know, like that. And I was, cause I was kind of just really taking over. And then when we did, the craziest part is when we did, the song together, like we did the song, together, and he was coming in to do the rap part, and he did on stage, but and I said backstage, we were working on it, and I put videos up of that backstage. I said, you want to work on the song a little bit? He goes, man, I've been doing this a long time, brother. He said, I got it. I said, all right. And we get out there, and then I go, I do Vanilla Ice, baby, ice, baby. And I go, something like, tell him, Rob. And then he goes, take heat. I'm a lyrical poet. Miami's on the scene, just in case you didn't know it. It's my town. And he forgot the lyrics.
Oh.
And, yeah. And I was like, oh, shoot. And I just kept playing. And he goes, he's a pro. So he goes, y'all know the words. And everybody started singing the rest of the lyrics. But it's, and people would knock him over that. But it's hard to, when you go from, all right, stop, collaborate and listen, to all right, stop, collaborate and listen. It's trying to rap over that is different, and it does affect your mind. If anybody don't believe that, they should try to change a song up and completely from the way it was, and then try to remember all the lyrics as you go without reading them. It's tough.
Oh, I'm sure. Tough. Especially with rap, I imagine too, because you're changing the rhythm and the speed and the tempo and all them, you know,
everything. It sounded, the way I did it, it sounded, it was a version that was supposed to be sang, so it's really not easy to rap to,
because
you expect the rap to be faster.
Yep.
Anyway, I don't know. I think it's funny. I hope he don't look back on that and go, golly, man, I don't want anybody to ever see that. But I'm sure he don't care.
That's great. That's awesome. Oh, my voice here. The last thing I like to do a fun game called Pick a Number. You're going to pick a number between 1 and 20, and I'm going to ask you a random corresponding question.
Okay. Like that. 7.
Seven.
I bet 7 gets picked a lot, don't it?
It gets off and on, but it is kind of a fun one. I mean, a little dark, but it's a fun one. It's what it can be a little dark. I mean, in the contents, but it's what song would you have played at your funeral and why?
Little Debbie.
Little Debbie?
The one that you just wrote. I just had that in my head to say no matter what the question was. I just said, I'm going to say Little Debbie no matter what. It just so happened to fit so perfectly. So. It fits so well.
That's awesome.
Little Debbie, they're like, what killed him? Little Debbie.
Little Debbie.
That's what killed him. You hear the song? A song I would have played at my funeral would. I wrote this song called Reward with a buddy of mine named Joshua Sherman, and we actually have recorded it. It's not released yet, but it's actually a song because, you know, I'm a Christian, so the song is actually about Jesus. So I would probably have that song played at my funeral. Well, probably would. I will die at some point, so maybe I will have that played. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, I don't know. I might not die.
Yeah, if we could all get away with that, right? Not dying.
Yeah. What is your before you go? What do your arms say?
Oh, my arms. Okay, so the one says "Love conquers, hate consumes," and then my other arm says "Love more, hate less."
They definitely coincide with one.
Yes, and it's in the 8-bit block format.
See that.
Yep. Yep.
Cool. Are you like a gaming guy? You like games?
I do. Yes. Yep. I'm a nerd through and through.
You have to be a nerd to play games. I play games too, but I'm not. I don't know. Maybe I could be a nerd. I don't know.
No. Well,
teach me how to be a nerd. But I hadn't played in a long time. But I used to always like gaming was all I did for a long time.
Yeah,
PlayStation. That is. You play a computer. Console.
So now, I mean, I have a couple older consoles. Like, I'm not a huge gamer now. I used to be, but not more. I'm more of like, I read a lot of comic books. I still play Dungeons and Dragons with some of my old high school buddies and things like that.
Wow.
So, oh, yeah. I'm through and through.
Yeah, you really are a nerd.
Yeah. I was not exaggerating.
You mean it in the truest sense. This man ain't casual.
Yeah.
He is not casual. He's over there writing a Dungeons & Dragons campaign as we speak on this interview.
That's right. We're multitasking.
Yes, sir. And the big bearded beast showed up. You can only kill him. I'm giving him ideas.
That's right. You look like you stepped out of a Dungeons & Dragons story with the big old beard. Yeah, hey, you look like...
Put me in it. You shall not pass.
I love it. You're right there. You got it.
Yep.
Oh, my voice is being weird. Sorry about that. So last thing, that was the last question I like. This has been a great conversation. Again, if you got any social media or your website you want to plug again, go ahead and plug away.
I just want to tell people to go sign up for do everything that you can do on my website, MartyRayProject.com, and also – since you do listen to podcasts, I would appreciate it if anybody likes interview style, just two entertainers interviewing other entertainers about entertainment. That's basically all we do at the Marty Ray Project chats. So everybody go there. Everybody rate and review this podcast because he deserves it. Art of
appreciate
bombing.
That.
And rate if you go to mine and you like it, rate and review it. If you don't like it, then just leave and act like you never heard it.
That's a good.
Yeah, we're sending it to somebody you hate, you know. That's yeah. What Chris. Why is Chris always says? He always says. He'll send a song. He'll say, "Hey, check this song out, and if you like it, good. Let me know. If you don't, send it to somebody you hate."
That's a good philosophy. I used to close out shows, you know, when I MC and be like, "Yeah, if you had a good time, make sure you leave a good Yelp review. If you had a bad time, leave a good Yelp review."
Yeah, I like that. No matter what type of time you had, leave a good one, okay?
Yeah, exactly. Appreciate that. All right, well, this has been great. Thanks again so much for taking the time.
All right, brother. Hey, God bless you, man.
Thank you.
The Art of Bombing is a Blitzed Entertainment production, hosted and produced by me, Dan Bublitz Jr. The stand-up spotlight bumper was produced by Joe Nicola Music. The Art of Bombing theme music was written and performed by John Holt. All other music was used under Creative Commons licensing. All stand-up audio clips were used with permission from the comedians. You can help the podcast by subscribing, leaving a 5-star rating, and a review. For previous episodes, merch, blogs, and more, please visit theartofbombingpod.com. And remember, stay safe so you can live to love.